You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode 13 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Carrusco. Carrusco is a three-piece indie rock band from Texas. They just released a new record entitled Wake, produced by Aaron Gillespie of Under Oath and engineered and recorded at Rio Grande Studios by Kenny Riley. Follow them on Spotify and catch them on tour this August. The dates will be announced soon, and you can keep checking out caruscomusic.com for those dates. It's CORUSCOMUSIC.com. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Carrusco Music. Once again, that is CORUSCOMUSIC. And they're a great band. They came on as a sponsor last week. I've really been digging their stuff. I've been checking it out. They've actually also given their single that I'm going to play here in a minute, Better Off, they're giving it away for free to listeners of That One Time on Tour. All you have to do to get your free download of the song is go to caruscomusic.com/TOTOT. That is caruscomusic.com/TOTOT. So go get your free copy of this song. Without further ado, I'm going to play it right now. Here it is, Carrusco with Better Off.
This is Eric Johnson from Brazil and Saba Banks, and you're listening to That One Time on Tour with Chris Swinney.
Run for the road, cause it's going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. We'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the bank tomorrow, we'll do it all again.
Hey, what's going on out there? This is Chris Swinney. I am your host for That One Time on Tour. I'd like to thank you for coming back week in and week out. These episodes have been getting a ton of plays, and it just keeps growing and growing exponentially with every new episode. So thank you guys so much for coming back. We have a really good episode again this week. I get to sit down with my good friend Eric Johnson from the band Brazil and the band Saba Banks. I did a lot of touring with Brazil back in the day when they were on Fearless Records. I played bass for him for a while. We did some really, really crazy tours. If you've listened to episode one with Joel Green from Emory, Brazil was the band that I was playing with when we toured with Emory and I met Joel. So there's some stuff that we already talked about with Joel. We ended up talking with Eric as well. So before we get into my conversation with Eric, we've got some new things to talk about. We have the TOTOT hotline. It is area code 765-372-8818. For my international listeners, that is the country code of 1. So 1-765-372-8818. You can call us. You can leave us a message. You know, if you guys have like a suggestion for a guest or if you have any questions for me. If you just want to say that you like the show or you don't like the show, like whatever you want to do, just leave me a message and maybe you'll get played on the show. Also, I'd really like to know, a lot of you guys out there are musicians. You've been on the road. If you have a story that you really want to tell, leave me a message on the TOTOT line, and I'll put it on the show. So once again, that is area code 765-372-8818. Call it 24/7. Just leave me a message, and I'm going to check all of them, and I'm going to put the best ones up on in a future episode. So check that out. Make sure that you are liking us on all the social media stuff. It's TOTOT, I can't talk, TOTOT podcast on all the social medias. If you want to become a sponsor, you can hit me up at TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. We'll figure all of it out. Just hit me up and let me know. We're looking for sponsors for future episodes. And please rate and review and subscribe on iTunes, on SoundCloud, everything. So without further ado, I'm going to jump into my conversation because it is a dense, long conversation with Eric. We actually did it down where I teach guitar at Muncie Music Center, and it was very nice to have like a face-to-face kind of meeting. So without further ado, here it is, my conversation with Eric Johnson from Brazil and Saba Banks. So yeah, I'm sitting here with a good friend of mine, Mr. Eric Johnson from the illustrious Fearless Records band, Brazil, and Saba Banks, which you've been in Saba Banks way longer than Brazil, correct?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
So, how you been?
Ah, awesome, man. been really awesome.
This is like the first time that I've had like a face-to-face podcast. It's a little bit different than being on Skype or whatever.
I can turn around.
Get your phone out and turn around. We'll do Skype in the same room. Okay. So, what I like to do with these podcasts is... I like to start at the beginning. I've told my story many, many times of how that I've got into music. How did you get into music? What was like your first experience as a child or whenever it started? Like what got you to play guitar? Like what was it?
Well, I come from a musical background, really. My dad plays guitar. His mom, my grandma, played lap steel in country bands when she was really young. And then from the other side, my mom's sister, my aunt, can play just about anything and used to give lessons for quite a few things. And then their mom, my other grandma, she played organ in the church. So, you know, and especially with my aunt giving lessons, you know, she used to babysit me when I was like in kindergarten, and you know, she gave drum lessons, guitar lessons, trombone lessons, piano lessons. So I would go over there, and it was just, I could just get up there and make noise and play anything I want. And, you know, so I was just always around it, growing up. And, my dad, got me my first acoustic guitar when I was probably about, like 5 or 6.
Wow.
And,
did you jump right in, or were you just kind
of... Oh, no, no, I didn't jump right in.
Because I got a guitar when I was 7, but I wouldn't say that I started playing when I was 7.
No, no. I mean, I learned a few chords and, you know, wanted to... You know, and his purpose was getting me an acoustic guitar so it would be harder.
Yeah.
And...
Because it's definitely harder. The action, and especially if it's not like an expensive, nice Martin or something, it's
right.
Probably doesn't stay in tune.
Yeah, I don't even know what the brand was. It was
my first one was a Washburn, and it was horrible. But I learned how to play one by Metallica, and so I liked it.
Yeah, he basically gave me this stipulation that I had to know all my open chords,
okay,
and I had to be able to play and be able to switch, you know, between them, and then. Play, you know, at least I think 3 songs all the way through before he would get me an electric guitar.
So were you taking lessons or were you just...
Not at that point. I mean, I learned a little bit from him.
Okay.
And, like I said, at that time I just became, I learned some chords and got really discouraged.
As you do when you start playing guitar.
Right. So, my aunt had stopped giving lessons and she had given me her old drum set. And so I thought, well, this is a lot easier, you know, I thought, took a lot more coordination, but you know, all you really had to do was beat the hell out of them. Yeah. And, if you could kind of keep a beat, it sounded good. So
you don't have to worry about notes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Finger placement.
You know, the theory doesn't really get in.
Although there is, I mean, there's some theory to it.
No, no, definitely.
But definitely when you're looking at it, cause kids all the time when they come in here and they don't, like when I'm giving guitar lessons, they'll say, well, I think I'm just going to quit and play drums because it's easier. Like,
yeah.
Well, maybe it's easier.
Yeah. I think, though, it was really good for me to get some experience playing drums because it gave me a sense of how important the drummer is in a band, you know, really being the backbone. And then it improved my my rhythm. And but then, you know, I would say, and I wasn't really serious at it either. You know, I would play around, and I played with my dad sometimes. You know, he would get me to learn, I think we played like Hotel California or something together when he would get me on the weekends or whatever. But
did you play it in A minor or B minor?
On the drums?
Yeah, you're playing on the drums.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, because I have kids all the time that want to learn that song, and I'm like, they don't know bar chords yet. So I'm like, well, we'll just play it, you know, down a full step or put a capo on the second fret.
Right. No, so...
I'm sure your dad probably played it the right way.
Yeah, he probably did. I don't remember. I was still pretty young, but, you know, it was something easy that I could kind of keep a beat to on the drums. And so, you know, I started playing the drums, you know, for a couple of years, and then I decided, you know, that I guess, you know, I wanted to get back into guitar.
That kind of, like, lit the spark, right? The light lit the fire. Like, you started doing drums and you're like, well, maybe I should jump back on this thing.
Yeah. I still had, you know,
what were you listening to at the time? Was there anything that, like, you really liked?
Oh gosh. I mean, at that time, you know, I mean, this would have, you know, cause I'm kind of old,
you're just a little bit older than me, man.
I know, but, in the, well, this has been like mid '80s. So, you know, I remember hearing Hot for Teacher.
Okay.
And being just blown. I mean, I'd heard some Van Halen before, but just the intro with that the drums, you know, and then Eddie comes in just screaming on the guitar. I was just like, this is blowing my mind, you know, because I had grown up, you know, my parents listened to a lot of music and, you know, it was always... like Led Zeppelin and, you know, the Beatles and, my dad was really into jazz. So, and blues, you know, so I got a lot of different, influences, you know, at an early age. And I do remember, you know, specifically one time that, you know, I used to live in Fort Wayne, and my dad would come and get me for, you know, his weekend visitations. My parents were split up, and he was listening to this Beatles compilation. It's called Rock and Roll Music, and it's got just a little bit of the early stuff all the way up to later stuff. And I specifically remember the first time, it probably wasn't the first time I heard it, but the first time it clicked for me when I heard the song Hey Bulldog.
Okay.
And something about that, it was really the piano, you know, riff that's going there, but just the change of it, the intervals and stuff. And I was like, you know, this sounds really cool. And like, I want to do that. You know, I want to be able to create music like that. So the Beatles were always an early influence on me, you know, while a lot of other kids were, you know, my age listening to different stuff, you know, I was kind of going back and listening to a lot of that early stuff. But like I said, you know, I heard Van Halen and it was kind of all over. And then, you know, that kind of progressed into, you know, the heavier stuff. which I always wanted to, I was always looking for something that was heavier, you know? It was like, you know, from Van Halen, I quickly move on to like Motley Crue, and from Motley Crue quickly into, you know, like Metallica, and from that to Slayer, and then, you know, then I discovered like death metal, and I was like, well, shit, it doesn't get any heavier than that, really, you know, at least not at that time, not in like...
Things have changed a bit now.
Oh, yeah.
My students let me hear stuff all the time, I'm like, what the hell is that?
Right. Yeah, there's, I mean, people are always pushing, pushing the envelope, and, but,
So you were getting into, like, when you were getting into Metallica and stuff, you're saying that's, like, mid-80s?
Yeah.
Late 80s?
Yeah, mid-late 80s.
Okay.
And, you know.
The whole time you're playing guitar, too, so are you learning songs from those bands, like cover songs, like just to?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I did take lessons, I took lessons for maybe like 2 or 3 years, and I had two different teachers, and my later teacher, I did have him, you know, show me songs, but what he really ended up doing was help me tune my ear and learn how to figure out songs by myself.
Yeah,
and you know, I was never schooled in it. I didn't really know how to read music. You know, we did tablature and, but yeah, my attention span was very short. So a lot of times I wouldn't learn like the whole song and the whole solo and everything like that. I would just learn like parts of it. And
same with me. I'd always just learn like a riff from one of the songs.
Right. And then maybe like 2 years later, I'd be playing that riff and be like, oh yeah, I think I figured out, you know, the rest of this part. But, so yeah, I mean, it just kind of took off. You know, from there where I started playing on a regular basis. And, you know, I know early on, you know, I kind of wanted to play baseball when I was little. And then I found out I had asthma. And that kind of, you know, nipped that right in the bud.
Killed that dream, right?
Yeah, so... So
instead, being Smokey Bars the rest of your life playing guitar. Right?
Exactly, yeah. It's a much healthier option.
Yeah.
But no, that just led me to stay inside my room and
play the guitar
and practice, you know, and I found, you know, my first, you know, love that way.
What was your, was Saba Banks your first band? I mean, were you in a lot of bands before you got into some stuff a little bit more serious?
Yeah, I was in quite a few, not quite a few, but I was in, you know, a few bands. I started playing, you know, I started getting really serious about playing guitar when I was probably about 13. And then by the time I was 15, you know, and around the age of 13, I was, you know, kind of lucky enough that, you know, I got to go see some local bands around that, you know, kind of showed me that, you know, you could do it. You know, you could get out there and play. And... because I know you, you know, from growing up in Indiana, you know, you go see shows at whatever the the big arena or something like that, and you kind of just feel like that's a goal.
It's unattainable.
Exactly. It's this unattainable goal that, like, God, how would I ever get there? And then, you know, you see some local bands, and you're like, oh my God, like, they're actually really rocking out and, like, making really cool music, and this might be something that I could do. So, you know, I was, you know, involved in the music scene as far as going to shows and stuff a lot, and always, you know, making it known that I was, you know, the younger guy playing guitar. And so when I was about 15, there was a band that I was a fan of from around this Muncie kind of Anderson area here, called Soul Force.
Okay.
And they were pretty heavy and, you know, really cool guys. And they asked me to be a second guitar player. And they were all like 18, 19 years old, graduating high school. And I was 15. So I was like, yeah, definitely, you know. So I got
mostly doing originals, or were they doing?
No, it was all original.
All originals?
Yeah, yeah. It was all original stuff. You know, I got in the band. I think we had one practice, and they decided to fire the drummer. So I was like, all right, cool. Then we quickly found another drummer from another local band, and somebody that I had actually liked, and reformed, and kind of, you know, approached it a little bit differently as far as what they were doing with this Soul Force band. And we were a band called Pete's Eye.
Pete's Eye.
Pete's Eye, yes.
Cool.
Don't ask me where we got the name from. I don't really remember.
It's a cool name for a band, though.
Yeah, so we played around the Ball State area. There were two brothers in the band, John and Andy McCauley, and they were going to Ball State. So, you know, we played the Flying Tomato back when it was around, and you know, and all these places around here. And I was in that band for about 5 years, and kind of had some other little kind of side projects with some friends and stuff, but nothing too serious. And then I don't know, kind of took a little hiatus for a few years, and then got together and started jamming with some other guys and what would eventually become Saba Banks. Originally was a four-piece called Dagasinge.
I remember that. Again, I remember seeing that name on flyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've known you for so long, I had no idea that that was you.
Really?
Yeah.
And then we...
I'm learning stuff on this podcast right now.
We had that place just not very far from where we're at right now, over on Walnut. We had originally rented it, a downtown building here, for really cheap, and just to be a practice space, and ended up getting more space than we thought. So we started having shows there. I had kind of came up with a little logo for the band, which was like a lowercase D in a circle. We made the little plaque, put it out on the front, and people just started calling it the Circle D. So
I had no idea you had anything to do with that. I've gone to shows there.
Yeah.
When I was super young, I went to shows there.
Yeah. So we started doing that, and then we had a falling out. The band did, basically with two of the other members, you know, kind of couldn't agree on stuff. And we ended up basically reforming as a three-piece called Saba Banks. Got the name from an old In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Awesome.
About the Bermuda Triangle and a ship that had went missing called the Saba Banks. We spelled it completely different. But so that's where that kind of came about. And it was basically through that, you know, that how I ended up in Brazil. Aaron Smith, who was the other guitar player in Brazil, liked Saba Banks, and he was pretty much at all of our little local shows here. And actually, Saba Banks in Brazil, which was called London at the time.
At the time, yeah.
We played our first shows together. And we played a couple shows together after that, and originally they were, I don't remember if they were a four piece or a five piece, but Jonathan was originally the drummer of the band, and they had another guy playing guitar and singing. And they had a tour set up, and they were kind of unsure whether their guitar player singer was going to make it. And Jonathan had contacted me and was like, would you be interested in filling in if he doesn't, you know, want to do it? And I was kind of just like, thanks, but no thanks, not really. You know, it was like, I was still kind of unsure. I was, you know, I was kind of a music Nazi back then. I didn't, you know, there were certain things. I was just not very open-minded to a lot of different styles of music. You know, I liked what I liked, and if it wasn't underground, you know, completely underground, indie, you know, aggro sort of stuff, that I wasn't on board. And I, you know, I liked, you know, what I'd heard of Brazil, but it just, you know, it wasn't my cup of tea, really, I didn't think at the time. And so I declined that, and we ended up actually playing a show together right before they left for the tour, and their guitar player was fine, and they went out and did it. And I think they got back from that tour and ended up, I'm not sure if they fired him or what, they parted ways, basically. Yeah. And so it was going to be that Jonathan was going to step in as the singer. But they were having trouble finding a drummer, which led to quite a few years after I did join the band, where this long line of drummers that we had. So anyway, they asked me to come out and just fill in as a second guitar player. And I was like, sure, you know, I'll do that. And Jonathan had set up a tour for like a 1 week tour for Saba Banks and Brazil to go out.
You were pulling double duty?
Yeah. And actually, Jonathan ended up pulling double duty on that too, because the drummer for Saba Banks, I had told him that we had this, you know, we're going to go out on the road and play. You know, we'd never done that shit before. I mean, besides going to like Indy and maybe Fort Wayne and stuff like that. But like, we're actually going to go do this. And he basically kind of at the last minute pulled out. And I knew that Jonathan was a good enough drummer that he could fill in. So Jonathan filled in for us on drums for Saba Banks. And then unfortunately, Brazil could, they changed their name to Brazil at that time. They'd found out that there was another band called London previously. I want to say that one of the guys from Rat was, might have been it, or
you don't mess with those guys.
No. So
they're the Round and Round guys, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shout out to Rat.
Shout out to Rat, man. So Jonathan ended up playing drums for both bands because they couldn't find anybody to play drums so he could sing, and we couldn't talk him into doing the headset mic thing, you know, the Phil Collins. It just, I guess, just didn't look cool. So
so who sang for that, for Brazil?
Nobody. We just did...
instrumental set? It
was instrumental, yeah.
I mean, I could see Brazil being able to pull that off, not a lot of other bands.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I mean, it just gave Aaron and I as guitar players a little more freedom to freak out and make crazy noises, you know.
Well, and I always, like, I mean, you know, tangent, with Brazil, you know, being kind of a fan of it and then getting to tour with you guys and eventually playing with you guys, the cool, the dichotomy that I always got with you and Aaron was that you seemed like the more traditionally taught theory, like, regular guitarist, not saying you're regular, just
right.
And then he was just, hey, I'm gonna make as much weird noises as I can, and somehow it all kind of melded together. I always liked that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that was definitely kind of the roles that we ended up, you know, playing.
Well, like at any point he was making like weird chime noises and stuff, you were playing chords. So I'm like,
I
identified more with you. Let's just say that. Even though he was really cool, I'm not the noise guy.
Yeah, no, he was not just being the guitar player, but, you know, he was doing stuff over there, you know, creating his whole soundscape of stuff going on. But so we did that tour together, both bands, and it was on that tour that I think we were in Appleton, Wisconsin, and we played this little house show, and Jonathan and I had both got up early that day, and we went on a little walk or something. He told me, he was like, hey, I just got, you know, they had made a demo and sent it out to a bunch of people. And he was like, I haven't told anybody yet. You know, nobody's awake. He was like, I just, you know, got an email from Bob at Fearless Records. He was like, and they want to, you know, offer us a deal. He was like, so, you know, I know you're kind of just filling in as the second guitar player, but we'd like to, you know, have you. But, you know, I kind of need to know so we can start getting this ball rolling and, you know, find another drummer and all that good stuff. And
did Jonathan sing on the original demo?
On the demo that he sent to Fearless, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. They had cut a demo with the other guy before that, and I think a lot of the songs were similar, but Jonathan kind of went back and put his own take on everything and redid all the lyrics and everything like that. So yeah, they he was like, you know, if you want to be in the band, you know, this is it. And
what were your thoughts?
Well, my
did you even know what Fearless Records was? I mean, did you think it was like your ticket? Or like, what did you think at the time?
No, I mean, I didn't know a lot about Fearless. I knew that, you know, that At the Drive-In had a couple records on there, and that was really, I wasn't into a lot of the pop punk stuff that they were doing.
That's kind of like what they had. They had like At the Drive-In and then pop punk.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so I wasn't, you know, a huge fan of that just because, I don't know, you know, not that I don't like that, you know, or appreciate, I guess, that type of music, but, it just, you know, it would get a little mundane to me.
Yeah. So, well, and it seemed like it back in those days, it seemed like every label would sign like 9 bands at the same time and you couldn't tell each band from the next band.
Oh, too. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. There were a lot of bands, you know, that had that similar sound. And so I was just like, you know, it'll definitely get me out and get me playing. And, you know, it was what I wanted to do is be a guitar player. It wasn't necessarily, you know, what I thought I would be doing, but, you know, sometimes you don't really end up, things don't go the way you think they're going to go. You know, they go the way they're supposed to go. And, that's what I believe happened, you know, is, so, you know, I kind of kept Saba Banks, you know, we were still together. We didn't break up. But they knew I was, you know, I was going to start playing with Brazil. And, so, you know, we just did it. I'm trying to remember, you know.
Did you record the first EP, Dasein? How do you say that? How do you say it?
I always said Dasein. I'm not really sure.
But you guys recorded that here in Indiana, right?
Yeah, we recorded it down at Azimuth Studios, which we always thought was cool because Eminem had done some recording there, and I think he did some of the D12 stuff there. And so... we were using the same mic that Eminem used.
It's funny. I can't see you guys being that excited about
Eminem. Hey, you know,
from what I know of you guys, like Jonathan being like, oh man, Marshall Mathers.
Yeah, we did that one in Indy. That was just the 7 song, I think.
EP. How was the process? I mean, did you kind of put your own stamp on some of the songs, or was it all kind of written already? Or did you guys go into actually writing that actual EP once you joined?
No, all of those songs were actually written, except one, but the rest of them were, pretty much already written. As far as putting my own stamp on the guitar parts on that, you know, I didn't really do much except maybe, you know, add a little effect here and there. But, you know, at that point I was kind of, you know, playing what I was told to play.
Yeah.
A lot of the things I did too, with that band was, we would, you know, having the piano or the keyboards in the band, a lot of times Nick, the keyboard player, and myself would play the same thing. Just to kind of give it a different sound, you know, here it is on piano, here it is on guitar at the same time. which for me was really challenging, because transposing something from a piano to a guitar,
it's not easy.
And was cool because it was a challenge, you know. I mean, there's actually one one part off of the full length Hostage and Meaning of Life that that when I transposed it, it was like a tongue twister for my fingers, you know. It was like, oh my god, like,
I remember that do 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 do, something like that. Or was that, am I just thinking of something else? Because I remember seeing, like, when I was playing with you guys, when I was touring with you, when that part would come up, I think it was on Escape, maybe.
No, the part, well.
Well, that, I would just look at you and Nick, and you guys would be so in sync. And I'm like, man, that does not look easy to do, because Nick's going crazy on the keyboard, and you're just rocking it, man.
No, actually, that part was kind of easy, because it was just like playing an open D. Okay. That I just had to kind of lift a few fingers on. But, no, the song was called We.
I remember playing We. And the bass line was easy.
Yeah, but there was a specific guitar part that was like da 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 da, and just,
I remember that now.
The position of where I had to play it on guitar to get my notes to be the same as the notes that he was playing on the keyboard were, yeah, it was definitely difficult, but it was fun, you know. I mean, that was a challenge for me. So that's really when I kind of started, getting more into the band, and I started feeling more like, you know, something that I was actually part of, and not something guys I was just playing with.
And you guys recorded that with Alex Newport out in California, right?
Yeah.
How was the process with Alex? I mean, I've met Alex when I was with you guys. I've spoken to him other times. He actually has gone on to, not only was he in Nailbomb and like all these crazy bands, but I don't know how familiar you are with City in Color, which is Dallas Green from Alexis on Fire.
Yeah.
I know you guys toured with Alexis, mm-hmm. but Dallas Green's like last two or three albums have been produced by Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, it's crazy to see some of the stuff he's produced and then to see that stripped down, like acoustic kind of stuff.
Right.
So what was your take on working with him?
Well, that, I mean, to me, that was really, that whole process was when stuff for me started kind of getting surreal. Because yeah, I mean, I know that,
you're in LA.
Well, yeah, yeah. We're in LA, and, but you know, Alex, you know, I, like I said, you know, being a fan of, you know, I got into heavy stuff at an early age, and I was into death metal. And so, you know, when I was, I was in like high school, there were like kind of two major labels that did the death metal stuff. It was Earache and yeah. Roadrunner.
Yeah.
There was, and I'm not even going to remember which label that they were on, but Alex used to be in a band called Fudge Tunnel.
I remember that band.
Hate Songs in E Minor.
Yeah.
And
I had that record,
and I got it because I thought, well, these guys got to be, you know, I thought they were death metal, and they really weren't. It was just like sludge.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just really heavy, sludgy stuff. So I knew who he was from that. So instantly, you know, I was like, well, this is really cool. You know, I'm getting to meet Alex Newport. And, he was like, the guitar tech or something on, Sepultura's, Chaos AD, I think it was. So he knew those guys, you know, and that was another, you know.
Weren't some of those guys in Nailbomb?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Max
was Max in, yeah.
Nailbomb. And then, you know, knowing that he had done a couple of the At the Drive-In recordings for Fearless, kind of how we got, you know, tagged up with him. But, you know, he was super nice guy, you know, and really awesome to work with. You know, I had a lot of misconceptions about what the music industry was going to be like before I got in it. You know, I think
everybody kind of does.
I thought, oh, a producer, he's going to, you know, fuck all our stuff up and tell us what to play and like change all of our songs around. And it wasn't like that at all. You know, we had, we had one day of pre-production before we started recording, and we went to this, I don't remember what it's called, this place out in LA where bands could rent, you know, a little space and practice in, and they had tons of spots in there. And, you know, we basically just set up like a band and played for him, and he listened to the stuff, and, you know, one of his only suggestions was like, maybe do the chorus like an extra time there.
Was he taking notes or anything, or was he just listening?
He was mainly listening. He might have been writing stuff down. I don't know that I was paying too much attention.
The producers that I've worked with in the past, a lot of the time, I mean, sometimes they'll help you with whatever, but I mean, mostly it's like tempos or do the chorus twice or, you know, stuff like that.
So it was totally not what I expected. And he was such a nice and cool guy. And another thing about that experience, which was, you know, surreal for me, was that, we had been, we'd been out on the road. And, I was still always a huge fan of, the older Chicago punk or, post punk sort of scene and, huge like Jesus Lizard fan and, all that stuff. And I remember we were playing a show somewhere in Texas and, this guy was the sound guy was playing something over the PA, and I was just like, God, this is freaking awesome. You know, it kind of sounds like Jesus Lizard or something. Like I got to go ask him who this is, and that was the first time I was turned on to this band called Rye Coalition.
I remember meeting those guys in Austin.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And, so I became a huge fan of those guys.
They're great, man.
Instantly.
You got me onto them. You actually gave me like a copy of their stuff on that tour.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yeah. I was probably pushing them on everybody because it was just like, you gotta fucking listen to this band. Like they're amazing. And then they did a record with Steve Albini.
Didn't they do one with Dave Grohl too that got shelved?
Yeah. And that was actually,
cause I remember talking to them about that. They're like, yeah, we did this album, but now it's not coming out. Or I don't know if it ever, it probably did come out.
It did. Yeah. Yeah. So like we were walking, we were doing that day of pre-production out there and, I was walking through the halls, probably going outside for something. And I passed a guy and I'm like, that looks like the drummer for Rye Coalition. And pretty soon I passed another guy. I was like, yep, that's them. So I, of course, being a fan of theirs, I was like, I hunted them down and started talking to them. And they were super cool guys. And they're from Jersey. And our drummer at the time, which we, I kind of skipped over that whole part where we went through, where Brazil went through.
Before you found James.
Before we found James, yeah. When we went through like a mass of drummers, like where we would do a tour, where we would have one drummer, we would go home and either we would want them to play drums and they didn't want to, or we didn't want them to play drums and they wanted to, or, stuff just didn't work out. And we went through a whole slew of drummers. The guy that originally played on Design, the first EP, he did like maybe one or two tours with us and he just kind of, he had another band that he was in, and just, he kind of wasn't into it. He didn't really know where it was going to go. So, but he was, he was an amazing drummer. So then we were always kind of trying to fill his shoes and find somebody that played like him. And, we ended up getting James finally after we auditioned like hundreds of guys. And, so James is from Jersey.
Yeah.
And
Woodbridge or somewhere. I remember him staying at his parents' house.
Yeah. Yeah. He was from Woodbridge. And, it turns out the Rye Coalition dudes weren't, didn't come from too far from, well, Jersey's not huge.
Yeah.
So,
unless you're out in the Pine Barrens.
Right. But so they had mutual friends and everything. So we just kind of hit it off, at least I did with those guys and kind of, wanted to stay in touch with them. And, like I said, I was a huge fan. That was like their first day of, they were doing pre-production. They had just got signed to, DreamWorks at the time and was going to have Dave Grohl produce their record. And, just so happens, Dave didn't show up that day, so we didn't get to meet him. We went and hung out with him one night at their villa and, super cool guys, And, like I said, I was just a really huge fan of him. And, yeah, then we ended up,
I just remember we were at Emo's mm-hmm. in Austin, and there's another story that goes along with that. I'm sure we'll talk about roast beef.
Oh, gosh.
When we get to the tour stories.
I don't know.
But, I just remember they kind of showed up, or they were playing upstairs or downstairs or somewhere else, but saw them and knew them, and we got to hang out with them, like, almost the whole night.
Yeah, we played the early show. We were on tour with Emery, I think.
Emery and From First to Last and something else. I don't know.
There was a couple of bands.
A couple other bands. A Thorn for Every Heart.
Yeah, they were on part of that tour. Yeah. It changed up.
The Thorn for Every Heart was on part of it. There was a band, that band from Kentucky that I can never remember the name of the band. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I don't remember.
I remember little pieces.
Yeah, a lot of stuff I don't remember.
Well, if you go back, I mean, I don't know how many of these episodes you've actually listened to in preparation to be on the show, but my first episode was with Joel Green.
I did listen to the majority of that, yeah. I don't know.
And Joel Green just like, after we got off, stopped recording, he was like, man, I feel like I didn't remember anything.
Yeah. That was a good Joel impression, yeah, too.
You know, that's how he is.
Yeah.
Hey, man, sweet tea.
Yeah.
Shout out to Joel if you're listening, man.
Yeah, I love Joel. He was a great guy. But yeah, the deal was we played an early show and they were playing the late show, and I hadn't really been in touch with them. So, you know, I knew that their record hadn't came out yet. I ended up hanging out with them that night.
I just remember them saying that like they didn't really get dropped from the label, but they shelved the record for some reason and it just wasn't coming out.
Yeah, I think the deal was right after they signed to DreamWorks, Universal bought DreamWorks, and they just kind of got put into one of those
limbo.
Yeah, the horror stories that you hear about from the recording, from the record industry, where they recorded this record with Dave Grohl that was it is a really amazing album, and the label told him, that go back and record 5 more songs. And
no singles.
Exactly, and they were basically like, well,
this is what we did, put it out.
Yeah, and so they got into a big, custody battle over the child, yeah. And they ended up getting it, and they went back to their, the first label that they were on, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that, Gern Blanstein, a little label out of, I think, over on the East Coast. So, but they put it out for him. And, I think Dave even, tried to, petition against the label to get it put out. But
yeah,
just didn't work out. But awesome guys. And, that was really cool for me to, to get to meet those guys. And then,
I don't know if you remember this. You probably don't, because I remember weird things. But, so the whole Alex Newport thing, and just to kind of interject, because I think you'll find this funny if you didn't remember, but when I was on tour with you guys and we actually went and stayed at his loft where like the studio's at and everything, we spent the night there. Mm-hmm. My dad, many, many years before that, he'd always go to Karma here in Muncie, and whatever was playing in Karma, they always had like the little display thing with right. the CD. And if he liked it, he'd buy it. Mm-hmm. And one day he went in and Nail Bomb was being played. And so he bought it, is the picture with like the guy, the little girl with the gun to her head, whatever. Yeah. And my dad was crazy. He liked Pennywise and NoFX and Bad Religion and Nail Bomb and Sepultura. Like, he listened to all kinds of stuff. And I remember him coming home and like, oh, I bought this today at Karma. And I'd never heard of it. I was young. And we played it, and I'm like, you bought this? Like, it kind of freaked me out. But then he always loved that record and was like so into that record, and that got me into the record. So when we were on tour, when I was on tour with you guys and we stayed at Alex's house, I had Alex call my dad.
Oh wow.
To say like, hey, I'm the Nail Bomb guy. Yeah. And they talked for like 25 minutes, and my dad was like so excited, and like, I think Alex signed something for me to take to my dad. And so cool. That was my little thing, because I was a fan, but I just knew like my dad would freak out that like, he never really knew what I was doing on the road,
right? Because
there wasn't a lot of money back then. Mm-hmm. Like, in the future, made a little bit of money, and he's like, okay, cool. But like back then, it was pretty bare bones, as you know.
Oh, yeah.
So the fact that I was staying in L.A. at the Nail Bomb guy's apartment
right.
meant something to my dad.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was funny. I didn't know if you probably didn't remember or even knew that happened.
No, I didn't know that happened.
Alex thought it was cool because he's like, how old's your dad?
Yeah.
And I'm like, he's like, late 50s or whatever. He's like, and he likes my band. He just thought it. So he was like, yeah, call him up, man. And he talked to my dad for like a half hour. It was great.
That's cool. Yeah. Alex is a great guy. He was, probably don't know if he's still doing the band, but he was doing a band back when we recorded with him called Theory of Ruin.
I remember that name. I don't know much about it.
And that was another one of those bands that was kind of like right up my alley as far as that whole, the style that they were playing. But yeah, they were really cool.
So you guys were touring then on, Hostage and the Meaning of Life. That's mm-hmm. the name of the record, right?
Right.
So now I guess, you know, we've talked a little bit about it. Those tours, like when you first met me, give me like, I remember after like getting kind of indoctrinated in and you guys actually liked me.
Yeah.
The jokes that were like, well, we thought you were like this Blink 182 skater guy. Like Newbie told me that. Jonathan said that he's like, we weren't really sure if we were going to mesh well right. because I was in this like punk band, which we weren't poppy, but it was a little different than what you guys were doing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there was kind of this like.
Well, we met first on Warped Tour, right?
We met first on Warped. Yeah, well, that's what the first thing I did was I went out with you guys. Jonathan had asked me to go out to kind of be a roadie.
Right.
And I was actually out on Warped Tour before that, working with a band called The Reason, which you guys toured with later on from Canada.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it. And Jonathan's like, well, we got somebody else anyway. So then I went out with them, and like the day before I got back from Warped Tour with them, Jonathan's like, hey, the other guy fell through. You still want to do it? So I had like 12 hours at home to like do my laundry and stuff and then go back out on Warped Tour with you guys. So yeah, what were your thoughts? You probably thought I was just some punk kid.
No. I mean, I didn't know. I didn't know about Chronic Chaos. Really.
You're lucky, man.
Yeah. And either because like you guys just didn't play in the same circles we did.
Yeah. I think it was, I mean, we played all over like pretty much the same venues, but I think it was way, I mean, we were kind of like Metallica mixed with NoFX. I mean, it wasn't super poppy, but it wasn't what you guys were into.
Right.
It's completely different sides of the genre or whatever.
Yeah. I just, I think, did we meet you like out there or?
No, what happened is that my dad actually picked me up and brought me to the house on Jackson.
Okay, my old house.
Yeah, like 10 minutes before we left to drive to the first day.
Okay.
I didn't know anybody. The only person I'd ever spoken to for more than 10 minutes was Jonathan.
Right.
And so I get in this van and I'm like, nobody's talking to me. I was like, shit, we got like a 12-hour drive and then I'm going to be on the road with these guys for a month or whatever it was. I don't know anybody. You and I quickly kind of, I think we kind of bonded over some of the metal stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember the first couple weeks, no one really talking to me except you.
Really?
Like, we were cool.
Yeah.
And we always remained cool. And the other guys came around, but I didn't remember you and I kind of connecting first.
Yeah.
You're living with somebody in a van for months on end, you know?
Right, yeah. You gotta open up sometime.
So what do you remember of that first kind of, that I was on? Not your first time, but, like, the Warped Tour. Like, do you remember anything cool from that?
I mean, Warped Tour was really hard for me to get used to. I think you
It's a hard tour.
You did.
I had done it before.
Right.
Like, with my band and other bands being, like, roadies and playing and, like, kind of like an aux guitar guy and whatever. But it's kind of brutal if you're not in a bus.
Oh, yeah, if you're not in a bus. And if you're just not used to that, that sort of.
And we were doing side shows on the days off with Under Oath. And it was, I mean, we never got a break.
Right.
We had to drive all night because you have to be there at 7 in the morning, you know?
Yeah. But I remember we did like a couple weeks on the West Coast and then a couple weeks on the East Coast,
yeah.
Right? And did you do the East Coast stuff with us, right?
I did both.
You did both?
I did both, but I had to take like a week off and fly home for like a wedding or something.
Okay. Well, because I remember we did, I thought there was somebody else that was kind of out with us.
There was somebody else that was doing merch or something. Benji?
No, Benji was out with us, I believe, when we were...
I did one tour.
When we did the Coheed.
Yeah, I did one tour with Benji. There was somebody else that was...
Yeah, it was one of Jonathan's friends, a guy named Tim.
I remember Tim.
Well, so you were out at the same time as Tim?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Because so, I was doing more like...
Doing the merch and stuff.
Merch and fixing guitars. And,
right.
And I remember one thing that Jonathan told me.
I never let you change my strings, did I?
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah. You didn't at first.
Okay.
But then you kind of saw me do errands and like, oh, well, you kind of know what you're doing.
Okay.
But I remember Jonathan was like, we were so worried because we thought like you were this like punk guy because of the band you were in that you would go out with us and we were paying you to be out with us, but you'd just be watching the bands all day because you're like someone that would go to Warped Tour.
Oh.
and then he found out very quickly. It's like, yeah, I like Pennywise and NoFX, but the rest of the bands can suck it.
Yeah.
Like I didn't really care, you know? And I'd done it so many times anyway, like, to me, it was just a job.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I'd ever even be friends with you guys. I was just out there trying to not be home.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, Warped Tour was just different, I mean, for me, because I mean, as you know, generally when you go out on a tour, you know, you kind of, you know, you're working at night, basically. Yeah. I mean, you're driving during the day.
It's complete, like, opposite.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you're playing at noon, and then you've got all that time.
You
got to
be there at, like, 8 o'clock in the morning, and you're there all day. And if you don't have a bus, you don't have anywhere to go hide, you know, or anything like that. So, I know that the first.
That's why I made friends with Coheed.
Yeah.
Remember those times when we'd sleep on their bus?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember that well. I do remember some stuff.
Well, I just remember, like, you know, the Canadian dates up in Eastern Canada, like Quebec City and Montreal. There's like 2 or 3 days where I was just like, see you guys later. I'm sleeping on Coheed's bus. And then I wouldn't see you guys until you played, and then I'd bail.
Right. Yeah, I think a few of us did that.
Because it was so hot. And I mean, I don't know. I told a story on one of the episodes where I was sleeping on top of the trailer. I don't know if you remember that or not.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy came around to knock on the door to wake everybody up, and I fell off and hit the hitch, and, like, it cut my leg up real bad, and I almost, like, couldn't even walk.
Yeah.
Horrible. So.
Yeah.
Got hurt.
I do remember that, barely. But
we're old, man. It's been a long time.
Yeah. But just getting into the swing of things, you know, being on that type of tour, that festival tour. I know the first few weeks that we did it, I hated it.
Yeah.
And I could not get into it at all. And then the last 2 weeks that we did it, I was like all geared up, and I had it
you
down
get into the swing of it. And it's like, this is really cool. Yeah. Like, this is barbecue every night and hanging out with the other bands.
Right. And you got to meet a lot of, you know, cool people and, you know, see bands, you know, that you didn't know about.
And we got fairly close with the Under Oath guys, cause we were playing all those sideshows with them. And
yeah.
And like, and that tour actually is what led me to actually play later in Underminded. Because remember, they were setting up the stage that we were on, and then I ended up playing bass for them and doing a lot of stuff for them.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that tour was big for me. I met a lot of people that later on really helped me out. I mean, not you guys especially, because I ended up playing with you at one point.
Yeah, and with the From First to Last guys.
From First to Last guys,
they were on that stage,
and
too.
And, of course, you know, I've talked about this on past episodes. Little Sonny is now Grammy Award-winning Skrillex.
Yeah, I about shit when I saw Rolling Stone with his face on it. I was like, the fuck is Skrillex? Like, I was like,
dude, do you remember when he used to, like, let us hear his little beats that he would make on tour? And I'm like, I don't get it, but it's kind of cool. And
I remember in I think it was in like the Emory guys' hometown. Was it, is that Columbia or
they're from Greer, but Columbia was where the New Brooklyn Tavern or whatever we played.
Okay, yeah, I remember being backstage and he was doing some stuff on a laptop, and he let me listen to it, and I was just like, honestly, dude,
it sounded like Fruity Loops.
I'm like, you got more talent than, like, the entire band, kid. Like, you know, like, he really had.
He let me hear it all the time. And I mean, I'd say this on the podcast whenever we talk about it, but, like, I didn't really get it. It's not like what I would listen to.
Right.
But I'm like, that's really cool. Like, the way he put things together. And
yeah.
And I mean, I thought he was a cool singer. He had a cool vibe to him, and those guys are super nice to us, man. Like, I always said, I mean, there's some stuff maybe we won't talk about completely.
Yeah, definitely.
Change the names to protect the innocent.
Nah.
So, okay, then that tour. We did like 2 or 3 month tour with Emory headline. It was their first headlining tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've talked about it at length on some of the other podcasts. But what do you remember about that tour? That's when I actually ended up playing with you guys.
Right. So did we do that, like, directly after the Warp?
It was, I think we had a couple weeks off, because I remember being able to come home and kind of settle up on my rent and take care of some stuff, and then it's like, yep, time to go, and we hit it out again.
Yeah. Gosh. I mean, that was a long tour, wasn't it? Like,
it was at least 10 weeks.
Okay.
I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Started in Seattle and ended in Seattle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Gosh, what do I remember from that? I mean, there's the obvious stuff that, you know.
Let's talk about the obvious stuff.
You know, just the whole.
We're getting close to an hour. I like to keep things around an hour. So we've got 10, 15 minutes to talk about the obvious stuff, and then we'll tie a bow on it.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, basically just, you know, we you know, as a band, we had an incident happened where we let's just say lost our bass player right in the middle
in Nashville,
right in the middle of a tour. And, you know, we were lucky enough to have you with us, somebody that,
well, I just remember, this is what I remember. So it happened. He bailed. And we go back to the guy's house we're staying at after the gig. Mm-hmm. And you guys are like having this meeting and I'm just kind of sitting there. And you're all kind of upset. And it's a big deal because that tour, like all the shows were sold out. Like that tour was massive.
Yeah.
And you guys are kind of, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I kind of went, I raised my hand. I'm like, you guys know I know how to play bass, right? And everybody just kind of looked at me and went, can you learn like 8 or 10 songs tonight? And I said, I'll do my best.
I think you got like 6 or so.
I got like 6 that night. Yeah. Right. Because the next day was Little Rock. I remember Little Rock, Arkansas was the next place.
Yeah. No, you saved our ass, man.
I had a blast, man. It was great.
You saved our ass.
I'd never really played bass in a band before. But I mean, if you play guitar, you can kind of pick out the root notes or...
I think you stopped wanting to, you weren't changing strings after that, right?
I was changing Joel Green's strings because he was letting me use all his gear.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't have a bass. Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, and that I told the story when Joel was on the show, you know, I asked him that next day if I could use his equipment, but that night at you guys' friends, whoever's friends it was in Nashville we were staying at, he had a bass, but it was a 5-string. I'd never played a 5-string before. I mean, I understand you just play on the E instead, but.
Right.
I had to learn all the songs on a 5-string and I'd never played a 5-string before.
And then turn around and play
it on a regular 4-string the next day.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of started slacking a bit. I think I got comfortable like, oh, I'm in the band.
Oh
now.
Yeah, I'm in the band. I don't have to carry shit or I don't have to sit at the merch table and tell everybody it's my birthday every night.
Hey man, tips. I made some good tips. Ricky from First to Last merch guy, manager, whatever. He gave me that little trick. You tell people. And so if you guys listening out there go see a band play and the merch guy says it's his birthday, it's probably not his birthday.
Exactly.
It's a scam. I made a lot of money doing that. A lot of money.
Yeah. That was always funny. Yeah.
But I tell you, man, like I had a blast playing with you guys. Like it was, and I mean, I think you're the only one that I've really stayed pretty much in contact with. Like, I love the other guys. I talked to him on Facebook and stuff like that. Like, Jonathan's going to be on the show. Nick said he's going to be on the show as well. But
tips.
Let's get into some of that. Now, that's one thing I do want to talk about. When we did those side shows with Under Oath, and we were in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if anybody out there listening is from Baltimore, you cannot tell me that you guys don't have the biggest rats I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, my God.
So we're playing, I think the Auto Bar, and which I played there with the Ataris as well.
Cool
but
place.
Yeah, cool place, great place. But we were trying to find Nick, we couldn't find Nick, and we go out, and his head is laying in the gutter next to the tire of Under Oath's bus, and there's like 3 rats like sitting there, like ready to pounce, like they thought he was like food,
right?
And I had to like carry him on my shoulders. And
rats the size of like small dogs.
Rats the size of small, like the size of Jack Russell Terriers.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was some really good things. What was the tips thing? I don't really.
Oh God.
This is what the meat of this podcast is about. We talk a lot about history and whatever, but it's that one time on tour. So we gotta dive a little deeper into this.
There was something I think about you. Maybe you were going to give him money. Maybe it was his like per diem or something like that.
Because that's one thing I still was in charge of, was making sure everybody got their money every week.
So I think like maybe you were going to give him as a per diem or something like that. And he was telling you to keep it as tips. But all he could really get out was tips.
Tips. You know, tips, tips. Tips. And then what he says, I'm going to write a book. What was that thing that he said? God. I can't remember, but it was hilarious, man.
I don't know.
That was the same night.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. And I remember the one time when we were in San Diego and I don't want to blow up his game or anything, but he'd had a little bit to drink and he threw up in the yard and that dog, I have a picture of that dog eating his throw up right next to him.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that, too. Yeah, we had some good times out in San Diego, too.
That's a really good time.
James' friend that lived out there. I think we stayed with him a few times.
And you know what I never realized until way, way later? Do you remember when we stayed in Beaverton, Oregon? I think James at one point was kind of talking to that girl or...
Yeah, it was his girlfriend who lived up there.
The dude that she lived with or roommates is the guy that's like the main roadie guy for NOFX.
Yeah.
Jay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't realize that until like 10, 12 years later when I'm watching like a NOFX documentary.
Oh, I thought you knew that at
Nobody
the time.
Ever told me. And I never knew what he looked like. And then I'm watching the show and I'm like... I stayed at that dude's house. Like, it was just very strange to me.
Yeah. He was a super nice guy.
He was super great, man. Yeah. Well, yeah. That's why the thing I posted on Facebook talking about this interview with you is the picture of us at the river, out there in Oregon, where that was a lot of fun.
Where you wouldn't let us do the things that we wanted to do. We wanted to, like, jump from rocks and do all kinds of crazy.
But I was kind of the tour manager.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when James would get on a skateboard.
Oh, yeah.
Be like, hey, dude, you're the drummer.
And you have a metal plate in your ankle already, you know.
I remember, it's crazy the things that you do remember, because, you know, I'd always try to get him to stop. And then I think it was the Emory tour, maybe another tour, we played that place, Extreme Wheels, in Buffalo.
Right.
And it was a skate park.
Uh-huh.
So, of course.
How are you going to keep him off?
We go inside, and he's gone, and he steals some kid's skateboard. And I'm like, man, we're just going to fucking go home. Like, this tour is over, because he's going to kill himself. And of course, he never did. But, man, those are some of the best memories. Like, I've done a lot of touring since then and a lot of touring before that, but those are some of the best memories. I just remember my birthday in Orange County. You guys covered me up with everything in the hotel room.
Is that Orange County? I thought we were in, like, Vegas. Or...
Maybe we're in Vegas. I don't remember. See, it escapes me where we were at. I feel like we had just played Chain Reaction, or we had just played the Glass House in Pomona. One of those two venues, but maybe I'm totally wrong.
I wanted to say that we were in Vegas because
maybe we're in Vegas.
A mutual friend had got a.
But see, the mutual friend you're talking about.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that she had driven to Orange County.
Okay.
To come see us, and she brought Nick roller skates because he was looking for roller skates on tour in Canada when she was doing merch for Melee. See, I remember all this stuff.
Oh God!
And we went on a little trip through the transit and the metro in Quebec City looking for roller skates for 7 hours, and she actually bought roller skates and brought them to him in Orange County.
That could be.
Maybe I'm wrong. It might have been Vegas.
I'm thinking it was Vegas, because I'm thinking that we were playing at the House of Blues.
It could have been.
Because, you know, once you start saying stuff, then it's little things in my head start popping.
You have to realize, too, this has been like 15 years ago.
Right.
I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, and a lot's happened since then. I've slept a lot since then.
I have two beautiful children.
I do.
You have two beautiful children. Yeah. We're dads now. It's crazy, man.
It is real crazy.
So this is like reminiscing. Like, that's why I love this. I talk about this all the time on the podcast. I don't really have an outlet creatively.
So who? Wait. Sorry to interrupt you, but who are we on tour with at that point? Because I remember...
That was still the Emory thing, I'm pretty sure.
I'm thinking the dudes from Piebald.
Engine Down? We did that tour too. Remember those guys?
Yeah, oh yeah.
They got their shit ripped off in Dallas.
Yeah.
And then like 8 months later, this cop, I don't know if you know the story.
No.
Eight months later, this cop went to like a domestic disturbance, and this lady answered the door holding like two kids in an Engine Down t-shirt. And they got their stuff back, I'm pretty sure. Maybe they didn't get it all back, but yeah, that's side note. But maybe it was that tour. I don't know.
Well, I'm trying
to remember. If we played House of Blues, it had to have been the Emory thing or Coheed or something like that.
Say Anything.
Say Anything. Okay.
It was Say Anything, Piebald, us, and...
because because I guess I do remember that because of Max.
Right.
Max is a good dude.
Well, the reason I'm thinking that it was that show and that we were in Vegas was because with Nick on the roller skates, we had gotten a room through the House of Blues. You got kind of like a discount or something. And I think Nick was with the guys from Piebald up in their room or something. And we were trying to coordinate, you know, we were going to go hang out and do this. And we were on the phone with Nick, and all of a sudden we just heard the... And then he gets back on the phone. He's like, I crashed out on my roller skates, you know? And he had basically just completely fallen over, like, in their hotel room on his roller skates.
Yeah.
You know? That was pretty funny.
Cool, man. Well, I tell you what, this, I feel like we've just scratched the surface. This always happens on these things. And I always say, I'm going to have people back for a part two. Is there any certain song you would like me to play from either Saba Banks or Brazil? Something that like is near and dear to your heart? Cause I always play a song after the interview.
Right.
I mean, I've got my favorites. I'm sure I'll probably play one that I really like as well. Maybe I'll play two.
Okay. I guess, you know, if you play the last song on the last Brazil record.
Okay. We didn't even talk about that. Working with Dave Fridman, you have to come back for part two.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I don't even remember, who was I talking to that actually worked with Fridman? Somebody on the show worked with Fridman. I don't remember.
Thursday.
Yeah. I was talking to Tucker.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to come back and talk a little bit about that. But so what's the name of that record? If people want to check it out, I'll play a song off that record. The last song,
It was called Philosophy of Velocity.
Philosophy of Velocity.
Yeah.
Now, tangent really quick. I do remember, wasn't there a glitch in one of the songs after production?
Mm-hmm.
That's on something the song, Crime, right? Crime and the Antique Solution or whatever the name of the song is.
I think it's in You Never Know.
You Never Know. Okay.
Yeah, it was
it's a small glitch. It almost sounds like you meant to do it.
Yeah, but no, it bugged the bejesus out of me.
Yeah, I remember hearing it the first time, like, oh man, what is going
on?
It's
something that happened in mastering, I guess, but
just a small glitch, and then it like burnt to every copy that ever came out. You can hear it.
Yeah. I threw a little bit of a fit about that.
I'm sure.
To the label, and no, you know, nothing happened with it. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, the last song on that record was called Strange Days, and just because I kind of, it was one of the songs that I wrote, you know, majority of the guitar parts for. Okay. And
I'll definitely play that. I've got that CD at home right now. I did some, I didn't have to do research for this because
we know
each other fairly well, but I got out my Brazil stuff and I was listening, and I was going through this bag of stuff that I haven't looked at in like 12 years, and I've got the hoodie and I've got a couple shirts. I'm like, man, maybe I'll post some pictures so people can see all this stuff. But have you had fun being on the show?
Oh yeah, definitely, man.
I really appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anything that you want to, like, what are you working on now? Are you doing anything musically?
Well, I'm trying to.
I know Saba Banks is always kind of an ongoing thing for you. So how can the people, can they check it out on Facebook?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's still a Saba, and it's spelled S-A-A-B-A-B-A-N-K-S. And yeah, we're looking at doing some stuff, but, you know, actually we kind of quote unquote played our last show last year at one point. I think it was last May or June, where, you know, we're getting older. We got families and stuff now, and, you know, don't have the time to do necessarily everything, you know, the way we used to do it. And, you know, our drummer had kind of, you know, thought that maybe, you know, we would be better off if, you know, if he left the band, and we just decided to kind of call it quits at that point. And, but, you know, here it is, you know, a little over a year later, and we're talking about getting back together and doing some stuff. But no, I'm getting into playing a little bit more. I've, you know, maybe if we do get back together, we can get into some, you know, some other stuff, you know.
And I think that you and I at some point should do what we've always talked about doing and maybe write some songs.
Yeah, definitely, man.
Because I'm such like, yeah, let's do it. And then like with everybody, I always, yeah, let's do this. And I never do. Mm-hmm. But you're somebody that I've always really respected. And I think it would be really great to actually try to write some stuff with you. So
yeah, that'd be cool.
Sometime in the future when I have more time and I'm not changing as many diapers, maybe we can do that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, as one of your previous bands, I think it was your previous band, was always saying, you know, the future is weird.
The future is weird.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, we don't talk about Devil's Brew enough on this podcast. So if you guys out there know what I'm talking about, you're in the club. If you don't know, you should go to YouTube, and you should YouTube Devil's Brew, Brew of the Dead. It's a little fun kind of Jack Black type, Tenacious D kind of thing that I did with my friends. We made movies, and I love you brought that up, man. No one else has said anything about Devil's Brew. Shout out to Devil's Brew out there.
Yeah.
You were in the Devil's crew.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, we definitely got to do more because we haven't talked about the reason or any of that stuff.
I think what we need to do is I've got a couple guests lined up in the next couple weeks, and then we'll come back. Since we live so close.
Yeah.
And maybe you can co-host one with me. Maybe we'll get, like, I'll tell you what, when Jonathan comes on, we'll all get together.
Okay.
That'll be really
I don't want to steal his thunder or anything. I mean,
well, but if you do, you do. He's just going to have to prepare for it, you know? You've got one under your belt already. He's going to come in. So, Jonathan, if you're listening, which I know you've listened to an episode or two already, Eric's calling you out. We're gonna get together, and we're going to see who's better at being on the podcast.
Oh, God, no.
No, I'm just playing around. But, yeah, there's so much more that we need to talk about.
I'm sure he remembers a lot more. Probably. And he's,
well, after his world travels he just did, maybe he doesn't.
Right. And he's a lot more loquacious than I am, so he would be, you know, much better spoken.
See, I love that you use the word loquacious. I don't have the people on this show normally, and I'm not saying anything bad, but they don't have the vocabulary or the lexicon.
Right.
that you do. Thank you. And I always like to use that, like, because lexicon is a synonym for vocabulary. Right. So I have such a large vocabulary that I know that lexicon is a synonym for vocabulary.
Right. And just, and last little thing that just reminded me of, you know, and by this, I mean parentheses.
You've got to explain what you're doing, because tell that story and then we'll call it a day.
Okay. Okay.
Because you did it and I'm seeing it and I know what's going on, but these people, it's just that, audio.
Yeah. I mean, because that was definitely a one time on tour.
That's okay. That's the moment. This is going to end it. So you got to tell this story and I think that'll be the closer.
Right. It was an ongoing joke for a while.
It was for a long time.
For a long time. But, you know, people, you know, were notorious for doing the
air quotes.
The air quotes, you know. And there was somebody, I don't even, you were talking to him.
It was some guy at Warped Tour.
Right, some guy.
Dude that, like, because whenever we were just kind of hanging out at the merch table or wherever, people would come up and especially like, why Brazil? I'm from Brazil. Right. Like, why is your band called Brazil? It wasn't one of those guys. It was somebody else.
No, I'm pretty sure he was inebriated.
I'm sure he'd had a couple, yeah.
And, he was talking to you and he was doing the whole finger quotes thing. And he just wanted to make sure that you knew that
to
understand that he was doing. And he said, you know, and by this, I mean parentheses.
So just to give you a visual, if you're out there listening and you might not think this is funny, but this was really funny to us. Maybe it was the heat of being on Warped Tour, or the monsters we were drinking 9 a day. But he was talking and doing air quotes, and he goes, and by this, meaning the air quotes, I mean in parentheses.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, not only was he, you know, doing this cliche thing, he was,
thought it was
he got it all wrong, yeah. You know. And so, I mean, that's the whole thing about, you know, to me on tour, is you latch onto those little things.
Oh, yeah, there's inside jokes like crazy.
That will make you laugh, because, you know, as a... Frank Zappa said in the movie 200 Motels, touring will make you crazy.
Yeah. I tell you though, man, I'll leave you with this and I'll see if you agree. You have a son. How old is your son?
He's 2.5.
Okay. My son just turned 2 in April. So mm-hmm. About the same age. Hope maybe they'll play music together. Who knows?
That'd be awesome.
But, I was telling my wife a while back, you know, touring's really tough, especially when you first start out and you don't really have any money or nobody really likes your band. You're just like pushing and pushing and pushing. But if Silas comes to me one day and he's like, Dad, this summer, me and my friends are going to get in this crappy old van and try to make it across the country playing music. I'm going to be like, dude,
do it.
I'll give you money. Right. I will support it because it's the best thing ever. Like I feel sorry for people I don't feel sorry for people, but those experiences that I had kind of shaped who I am. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I'm almost 40 years old and I've got a podcast talking about being on the road.
Right.
And it's not the being on the road in hotels and tour buses. It's all of it.
Right.
So yeah, if my son ever comes to me and wants to, you know, spend a summer nickeling and diming it across the country, man, I'm going to bankroll that shit.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I'm throwing everything I can at my kids musically, you know, you know, they've already have little play guitars.
Oh, Silas has got a ukulele. Silas has got drumsticks. He's got the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, we got last Christmas, we got my son a little drum set and not like, you know, cheap, like little Animal Muppets drum set that, you know, I used to have, but like a decent drum set.
My wife are considering that right now. There's a kit here at the store that I work at and they want like $300 and I almost bought it. She's like, he's 2. I'm like, yeah, but it's a nice drum set. You know?
Yeah.
I just want him to have and my daughter, Indy, as well. I want them to have everything that they want to do. I'm going to support it and nurture it. And
sure.
Just like my parents were. Like I told on the last, I think the last podcast, maybe when the Rock and Roll Summer Camp podcast, my first time ever playing out of state wasn't Ohio, wasn't Kentucky, it was Vermont.
Oh, wow.
Because we got a show off for Chronic Chaos when I was like a senior in high school or whatever to go play this show in Vermont. And get paid like $100. But my mom and my dad were like, oh, it's our anniversary weekend. Yeah, we'll just load up the van and that can be a trip for our anniversary and we'll take you guys up there. And we went up there and played and it was sold out. And like my parents supported me to a fault.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to do the same thing for my kids, which I'm sure you're probably in that same boat.
Definitely. Yeah.
And let's just, we'll end the podcast with saying that hopefully our sons will start a band.
Sure. Yeah.
maybe they can go out and have all the inside jokes that we have. Yeah. You know, and by that, I mean parentheses.
Parentheses, yeah.
So, Eric, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a lot of fun. And there, I say this every time, but part two for you is definitely going to happen because we've got so much more to talk about.
Right. And I live too close. I can come over and bug you anytime.
So. And we are currently at my studio where I teach guitar, but I am actually working on a new place in my house that we just moved to here in Muncie. It's going to be a nice little podcast studio. So maybe next time we'll be at my house. It'll sound a little better.
Cool. Awesome.
So thank you so much for being on the show. Yeah. I'm going to play, what did you say the name was? I know it's the last track.
Strange Days.
Strange Days by Brazil is coming up here in a second. But Eric, thank you very much. And we'll see you for part two very soon.
Sounds good.
Cool. Thanks.
And there it was, my conversation with Eric Johnson from Brazil and Saba Banks. I had a great time hanging out with Eric. It's been a really long time since we've actually gotten together and talked, and I'm glad kind of that we had this excuse to get together and do the podcast, and now we're talking about play dates with our kids and having barbecues and all kinds of good stuff. So I'm glad that I got to reconnect with Eric. He's a good buddy of mine, and I'm glad that you guys got to check it out. I hope you enjoyed it. I am going to play Strange Days. It's off Brazil's 2006 album, The Philosophy of Velocity. Say that five times fast. It was on Immortal Records. It was after they left Fearless. They did a record on Immortal. And then they had another EP that they actually recorded at my studio, the Gallows Recording Studio, back in the day. And I think you can get that on iTunes. So yeah, they've got a lot of good stuff, so go check it out. I really want to talk about this TOTOT hotline. It's 765-372-8818. Please leave me a message. Tell me a tour story. Tell me that you think I'm cool. Tell me that you hate me. I don't care what you tell me. Just tell me something, and I'll put the coolest, funniest stuff or, you know, best stuff on a future episode. So that is the TOTOT hotline. It is 765-372-8818. So leave me some love. Leave me some hate. A friend of mine replied to me the other day. They said, you know, they posted the Dag Nasty song, A Thin Line Between Love and Hate. So leave me some love and leave me some hate. So I will see you guys next week. I am very, very excited about my guest next week, Mr. Dewey Halpas, originally from the band Anatomy of a Ghost. He also played in Portugal the Man. And he now does an amazing podcast called the Pure Pleasure Podcast. Dewey is an old tour buddy of mine. When I was in Brazil, actually, we did some shows with Anatomy of a Ghost and Portugal the Man. So yeah, next week, episode 14 with Dewey from the Pure Pleasure Podcast is going to be on. We're going to talk podcasts and music and all kinds of good stuff. That brings that, you know, I forgot all about it. Tomorrow is the 4th of July. It's Independence Day. So I hope you guys have a good 4th of July. Do not blow anything up that you don't want to blow up with your fireworks. And I always wondered, somebody needs to leave me a message or email me. Fireworks is plural. So if you have one, like a singular, is it a firework? I've always wondered that. So if you know the answer to that, let me know. I'm not going to Google it. Just if you know the answer, let me know. So, okay, that's it. Check us out on all the social medias, TOTOT Podcast. Shoot me an email if you want to be a sponsor, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. And call us at the TOTOT hotline, 765-372-8818. So I'll see you guys next week. Here it is, Brazil, the band, not the country, with the song Strange Days. We'll be right back.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Frates from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.